Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're cracking open a truly rich and, well, timeless topic, something many consider absolutely essential for navigating life itself. We're diving deep into the profound wisdom of On the Good Life by the incredible Marcus Tullius Cicero.
And our mission, really, for this deep dive is to unearth that core wisdom from Cicero's, well, his vast works.
Yeah.
We want to extract what he actually had to say about achieving, you know, true happiness and fulfillment.
Right.
What's fascinating here is, despite being ancient, these insights are just incredibly relevant for today's complexities, all the information overload.
Absolutely.
Cicero offers us a kind of pathway, maybe a shortcut, to building what you might call an unshakable inner citadel of character.
I like that phrase.
It really brings us back to that fundamental human question, doesn't it? What genuinely constitutes a life worth living?
That question just echoes through the ages, doesn't it? And, you know, when it comes to answering it, you might picture some philosopher tucked away somewhere quiet.
Right, the ivory tower image.
Exactly. But Cicero, he was far from that. Marcus Tullius Cicero, born 106 BCE, I mean, this guy was a Roman statesman, a celebrated lawyer, a masterful orator whose words literally shaped Roman politics.
Yeah, a real public figure.
A new man, too, meaning he rose right to the top, consul, from a non-aristocratic background, purely on intellect and ambition. So what makes Cicero uniquely qualified to guide us on the good life? How did this incredibly active man become such a profound philosophical guide?
Well, it's precisely that dual perspective that makes him so compelling, I think.
Okay.
Cicero didn't just, you know, theorize from an armchair. He hammered out his ideas right in the thick of extreme personal and political chaos.
Like what kind of chaos?
Oh, we're talking civil wars, navigating these treacherous political alliances, facing exile for his principles, and, well, ultimately his own assassination.
Wow.
So his writings weren't detached academic exercises. They were more like a means to understand, to endure, and maybe offer some guidance amidst the literal collapse of his world.
Philosophy forged in fire, then.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, Cicero's personal struggles actually amplify the power of his message. He lived through the very chaos he sought to understand and, you know, transcend.
So it wasn't just theory for him.
Not at all. And he was also an academic skeptic, which means he wasn't rigidly tied to one school of thought.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. Instead, he brilliantly synthesized ideas from different traditions, you know, Stoicism with its focus on virtue and duty.
Right.
Epicureanism, maybe more focused on rational pleasure and tranquility. The Peripatetics. He made this complex Greek philosophy accessible and crucially practical for a Roman audience.
So he translated it. In a way.
In a way, yes. And it's this blend of high-level theory and, well, battle-tested experience that gives his work such unparalleled depth and credibility, even for us today.
Philosophy as a personal survival guide for a collapsing world, that's a really powerful idea. And On the Good Life, it isn't actually a single book, is it? It's more like a collection.
That's right. It's more like Cicero's entire intellectual legacy on human flourishing, all meticulously compiled. It's his comprehensive answer to that question. How do we truly live well?
Okay.
So yes, it's a compilation of his key philosophical treatises, really designed as a comprehensive guide to flourishing through wisdom and ethical living.
And the core message.
The central argument, while it sounds simple, is profoundly challenging, especially now. True happiness, he says, comes not from external things, you know, pleasure, wealth, power.
The usual suspects.
Exactly. But from the cultivation of virtue, wisdom, and moral character. For Cicero, virtus guided by reason is the highest good, the summum bonum.
The highest good.
And it is, in itself, sufficient for happiness.
Sufficient. Just virtue alone.
That's the claim. So the journey these texts take us on, it starts by questioning our usual ideas about success. Then it builds this robust framework rooted in understanding our rational social nature. It guides us in mastering emotions, fulfilling obligations, and critically recognizing that true advantage never, ever conflicts with moral integrity.
Wow.
This raises an important question for all of us today, doesn't it? Are we seeking happiness in the right places?
That question really hits home.
Mm-hmm.
So if the answer for many of us is maybe not, where does Cicero tell us to start looking? Where's the foundation for this unshakable inner citadel?
Okay, so he begins in On the Ends of Good and Evil. He meticulously examines these competing ethical systems.
Right.
And he critiques Epicureanism, the idea that pleasure is the highest good. He basically calls it self-centered and, well, unworthy of human dignity, reducing us, he felt, to just animals focused on sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, he champions the Stoic view.
Yeah.
Virtue is intrinsically good. It's the only true good.
The only one. What about things like health or wealth?
He calls those indifference. Health, wealth, even pain or death, they're indifferent. A wise person, understanding this, achieves an unshakable happiness because their well-being depends only on their character.
Which is in our control.
Which is entirely within their control, exactly, making them resilient to external fortune, to whatever happens.
That is a radical idea today when we tie happiness so much to external stuff.
It really is. External validation, accumulation, Cicero says, no, look inward.
So if virtue is our anchor, how do we actually build it? How do we build that inner resilience? Does he give us like a practical guide for dealing with our own internal storms, anxiety, fear, grief?
He absolutely does. And here's where it gets really interesting and incredibly practical.
Okay.
In the Tusculan Disputations, he presents philosophy as a kind of medicine for the soul.
Medicine for the soul. I like that.
Yeah. He directly addresses the five biggest things that get in the way of happiness. It's basically a masterclass in cognitive therapy centuries early.
Wow. Okay. What are they?
Right. So first, on contempt for death, he calmly argues death is either bliss or nothingness, so neither is really to be feared.
How so?
Well, if there's consciousness after death, it's likely a better state. If not, there's no feeling, so no pain. Either way, why fear it?
Okay, interesting logic. What's next?
Second, on bearing pain. He contends the mind can endure physical pain through strength of will and reason. We can kind of detach from mere physical sensations.
So mind over matter.
Essentially. A wise person, even under torture, he argues, can maintain inner happiness by focusing on virtue, which pain can't touch.
That's a high bar.
It is. Third, on overcoming grief. Cicero sees grief not just as an emotion, but as a judgment, a disease of the soul.
The judgment.
Yeah, a belief that we've suffered some terrible evil. He argues it's not uncontrollable emotion, but this belief. So by using reason to challenge why we believe the loss is so devastating.
We can manage it.
We can moderate it, yeah. Challenge the false beliefs about the loss.
Okay, so death, pain, grief.
Yeah.
What else?
Fourth, on other disturbances of the mind. This covers things like fear, lust, anger. He labels them all forms of madness.
Strong words.
Very. But he says they stem from false opinions, from irrational judgments about what's truly good or bad. And guess what the cure is?
Reason.
Reason, again. By correcting these faulty judgments, we can achieve tranquility, apatheia. Not apathy, like not caring, but freedom from those disturbing passions.
Freedom from disturbance.
Exactly. And he concludes this whole section powerfully. He says, look, if you can conquer these internal disturbances, if you don't fear death, can endure pain, master your passions, then what can possibly stand in the way of your happiness?
Nothing external, based on his logic.
Precisely, nothing. Therefore, virtue alone is sufficient for a good life.
It's really, what's fascinating here is how modern this sounds, isn't it? Like you said, classical cognitive therapy.
Centuries before its time, emphasizing the power of our mind, our judgments, to shape our experience.
So, okay, we've explored this powerful inner world, mastering ourselves. But Cicero also looked outward, right? He didn't see us as just isolated individuals.
No, definitely not. Our social nature is absolutely key for him.
And in On Duties, his big ethical work, he outlines these four cardinal virtues, the basis for all moral duties. Can you walk us through those?
Yeah, absolutely. So the four cardinal virtues are, first, wisdom. That's about the pursuit of truth, gaining knowledge.
Okay.
Second, justice. This covers fairness, giving everyone their due, respecting property, basically, being a good member of society.
Foundational stuff.
Very. Third is courage, or maybe greatness of spirit. It's about undertaking beneficial deeds, but also disdaining fortune, standing firm in your convictions even when it's hard.
Standing strong.
And fourth, temperance.
Mm-hmm.
This is about moderation, order, self-control in everything, keeping things in balance.
Wisdom, justice, courage, temperance.
Those are the pillars.
Yeah.
And Cicero fundamentally believed that your personal fulfillment is inseparable from contributing to the common good.
You can't just focus on yourself.
Exactly. Humans are naturally social beings, he argued. Our well-being is intrinsically linked to society's well-being. It's quite a contrast to some modern ideas of purely individualistic success, isn't it?
It really is. And that focus on duty and society leads to one of his most powerful, maybe most challenging points, doesn't it? This idea about morality and advantage.
Yes. This is where he truly, truly challenges us. In On Duties, he tackles that core dilemma head on. the perceived conflict between what's morally right, the honestum, and what seems expedient or advantageous, the utile.
Right, versus convenient, basically.
Pretty much. And Cicero's unwavering argument that conflict is an illusion.
An illusion? How?
He argues that true advantage is never separate from moral honor. An act that is shameful, that violates justice or fairness, can never be truly advantageous in the long run.
Why not? It might seem to work out sometimes.
Because it corrupts your soul, your character, and it undermines the social trust that's necessary for everyone's prosperity. It damages the fabric of society and ultimately yourself.
Does he give examples?
Oh, a very powerful one. Marcus Atilius Regulus, Roman general, captured by Carthage.
Okay.
He's sent back to Rome on parole, on his word of honor, to negotiate a peace treaty. But Regulus gets there and realizes the treaty is bad for Rome.
So what does he do?
He advises the Senate to reject it, knowing full well what would happen to him.
Which was?
To uphold his sacred oath, his promise, he voluntarily returned to Carthage, where he knew he'd be tortured and killed.
Wow. He chose death over dishonor and short-term gain for Rome.
Exactly. For Regulus, duty, honor was more expedient than life itself. If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is just a profound challenge to any purely self-interested view of success then and now.
It makes you stop and think, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
How often do we maybe prioritize fleeting advantage over real honor in our own lives, even in small ways?
Constantly, probably. It's a tough standard.
What an impactful story. But he also brings the human element to life in his shorter essays, right? It's not all about grand duties and generals. What about on friendship and on old age?
Absolutely. He gets very personal there. On friendship, he celebrates true friendship as one of life's absolute greatest gifts, second only maybe to wisdom.
I breeze.
It is. He argues genuine friendship has to be based on virtue and mutual affection, not just usefulness or convenience. A true friend is like another self.
Another self.
Yeah, a source of support in hardship, a partner in joy. He points to the legendary friendship between Laelius and Scipio as the ideal. It's about deep connection based on shared values.
That's beautiful. And on old age, people often dread getting older.
Right, and Cicero tackles that directly. He presents the arguments through the respected statesman Cato the Elder. He masterfully refutes the common complaints against aging.
Like what? Decline, uselessness.
Exactly. He doesn't see it as just decline. He emphasizes that old age brings its own unique rewards. Wisdom, authority, respect, the tranquility of a mind freed from those youthful passions.
A different kind of reward.
A different kind, yes. It's a time for intellectual pursuits, for mentoring younger generations, for finding a deep contentment. He really reframes aging not as an end, but as an opportunity.
So we've covered a lot of ground here, from inner virtue to public duty to friendship and aging. Let's try to distill this. For you, the listener tuning in right now, what are the most crucial takeaways? What does this all mean for you?
Okay, yeah. Let's nail down maybe 3 to 5 core lessons that feel incredibly relevant today.
Perfect.
One. Virtue as the sole true good. This is foundational. Our well-being, our happiness, fundamentally depends on our character, our moral core, not on external factors like how much money we have or what job title we hold.
Reevaluate success.
Completely. It challenges us to rethink where we actually place our energy and focus. Are we building character or just chasing externals?
Okay, what's number 2?
2, reason as the guide to living and mastering emotion. Remember, the medicine for the soul. Our emotional upsets, anxiety, anger, fear, they stem from the judgments we make about events, not the events themselves.
The interpretation matters more than the fact.
Precisely. Reason is our most powerful tool to correct those faulty judgments and find inner peace, that apatheia. It's about focusing on what we actually can control, our thoughts, our responses.
Okay, very practical. 3.
3. The indivisibility of morality and advantage. This is huge for navigating modern life, business, everything. True expediency, true benefit, always aligns with honor.
The Regulus example.
Exactly. Any immoral act, even if it seems to bring a short-term win, ultimately harms us. It corrupts our character, erodes trust. This applies everywhere.
Right. Number 4.
4. Duty as the cornerstone of a meaningful life. For Cicero, a good life isn't passive, it's active. Engaged in community, fulfilling obligations. Our personal fulfillment is tied up with contributing to the common good.
Not just about me.
Not just about me. It's about us. And finally, 5, philosophy as practical medicine for the soul. It's not just abstract head in the cloud stuff. It's a toolkit for living well, for dealing with life's inevitable difficulties, for maintaining psychic health day to day.
A practical guide. Those are powerful takeaways. And his works, they're just packed with memorable lines that really stick with you, aren't they? Little nuggets of wisdom.
They absolutely are. Just brilliant distillations. One that always resonates with me is, "Nothing is so unworthy of a wise man as to grieve for what he has lost, rather than to rejoice for what he retains."
Focus on what you have, what you control. Gratitude.
Exactly. Then there's the zinger. "The authority of those who teach is often an obstacle to those who want to learn."
Huh. Challenges authority.
Yeah, it highlights his skepticism, right? The importance of thinking for yourself, not just blindly accepting what you're told. Always question.
Ah, I like that. What else?
He also wisely noted, "No one can have all he wants, but a man can refrain from wanting what he has not got and cheerfully make the best of a bird in the hand."
Managing desire. Contentment. That's timeless advice.
Isn't it? And of course, the simple, profound, "Virtue is its own reward." It just captures that intrinsic value perfectly.
No external prize needed.
None. And finally, his beautiful definition of friendship. "Friendship is nothing other than an accord in all things, human and divine, conjoined with mutual goodwill and affection."
Accord, goodwill, affection. That elevates it beyond just hanging out.
It really does. Makes it almost sacred.
Okay, these are clearly not just ancient philosophical musings. They feel like blueprints for living.
Yeah.
So the big question, how can you, our listener, apply Cicero's wisdom in your own life right now, practically speaking?
Great question. There are many ways, actually. Let's think about emotional resilience. You can literally apply that Stoic CBT from the Tusculan Disputations.
In the moment.
Yeah. Next time you feel overwhelmed by anxiety or anger, stop and identify the underlying judgment. Is it losing my job is a catastrophe? Then rationally challenge it. Okay, is it really a catastrophe? Or is it a setback that might even open up new opportunities?
Reframing it.
Exactly. It builds that mental fortitude. Then, for ethical decision-making, use the Regulus test.
Yes, the general.
When you face a choice pitting short-term gain against your integrity, maybe in business, maybe personally ask yourself, what would Regulus do? Or what would a person of true honor do here? It helps prioritize character.
Okay, that's a clear test. What about relationships?
Right. For cultivating meaningful relationships, think about on friendship. Maybe do a little audit. Are your key friendships based on that Ciceronian ideal virtue, mutual affection, or more on convenience or utility? Then maybe invest more energy in those deeper connections.
Be intentional about friendships.
Be intentional. And for a positive framework for aging, draw from on old age. If you're getting older, or even just thinking about it, try to reframe those later years. See them not as decline, but as Cicero did, opportunities for wisdom, mentoring, intellectual growth, a time of unique reward.
Finding value in every stage.
Exactly. And finally, maybe the biggest one, finding a central purpose. Take some real time to reflect on what your personal highest good is, beyond just money or status. What truly aligns with your deepest character and your desire to contribute? Cicero pushes us to define that.
That's a deep exercise. For me, what was really surprising, or maybe just reinforced throughout this deep dive, was just how incredibly practical and psychologically sharp Cicero's work feels.
Mm-hmm.
It really does feel like he's speaking directly to our modern anxieties, our modern struggles, even across 2,000 years. It's not dusty, abstract philosophy. It's like a powerful manual for living well now.
And that truly, I think, is his enduring legacy. That's the most valuable lesson, maybe, from On the Good Life. It's this incredibly empowering realization. The quality of our life is ultimately determined not by what happens to us,
which we often can't control.
Right. But by how we choose to respond. Happiness, for Cicero, isn't some fleeting emotion blown about by external events. It's a profound state of being. It's an inner equilibrium built on the solid foundation of a virtuous character.
Inner equilibrium built on character.
That's the goal. So for you, our listener, here's maybe a final provocative thought to chew on. Consider what one external good you currently chase. Maybe it's wealth, maybe status, maybe constant approval, maybe even just physical comfort. That, upon reflection, might actually be distracting you from cultivating your inner virtue, your character. What would change in your life if you genuinely shifted that focus inward?
Something to really think about.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.